Welcome to the Sharp 600, brought to you by Covers.com. I'm your host, Rob Cressy, and I'm super excited to be jamming with you. And this is part three of a three-part podcast series we did on March Madness. And in this episode, we do a tournament roundtable plus give thoughts on the Final Four, live betting, and everything in between. If you didn't listen to the other two episodes where we break down every game from the opening round, as well as give our Cinderella teams, make sure you go back and listen.
Onions!
So what we're going to do now is we're going to talk about Final Four matchups. And what I also want to make sure that we do is get a little bit into the mindset and strategy behind all of this. Because when I think about filling out my March Madness brackets, I'm acutely aware of one thing, that overwhelmingly a one seed wins the tournament. And so often we can get into this mindset of, ooh, I want to pick all the upsets and go for a hero ball. But here's the challenge in all of that. What if you pick the wrong hero ball? So let's say you want Baylor to lose and then you have everything else go chalky. Well, the problem is if Baylor wins and then the upset comes from the other side of things, you're sitting there looking stupid. So that's where my mindset comes in, is as it gets further on down the road in the tournament, I'm a lot chalkier because that's what the numbers say. And I'm someone who's going to be playing probabilities instead of trying to play Miss Cleo, thinking that I'm going to get everything 100% correctly. Sure, is it fun to be the person who picks the three seed to upset the one seed further on? Of course it is. So with that sort of as the framing, let's bring in Jason Logan here. And Jason, what is your Final Four looking like?
For right now, I'm going with Alabama as my main Final Four. I haven't figured out my other sides of the bracket there just yet, but Alabama is definitely a team that I'm advancing from the East as a two seed through with Michigan. I mean, Michigan has a number one seed. Obviously the injury delivers is a big hit to them on both sides of the basketball. And then they could run into to LSU in that second round. And I'm high on SEC teams. I'm high on the Tigers. So for me, Alabama coming out there. I do like what Taco was saying about San Diego State. I think that matchup with Syracuse is going to be a pain in the ass for them. Syracuse is one of those teams that is just weird, a weird, weird team. But I think San Diego State might be able to make some headway. Not super high on Georgia Tech. So I don't know if Illinois is going to run into them. So Illinois may have a free path to that and get into the Final Four. I was high on Arkansas. I could see Arkansas making a run to the Final Four as well, too. And then Gonzaga, I think Gonzaga on that west side of the bracket. I mean, you got a team in Virginia that may not be able to play if their COVID tests don't play nice. And then you got a team with Kansas, as Rohit said, with, you know, you have no idea who's making the trip here. So I think Gonzaga gets a pretty easy pass through to the Final Four from the west.
So Jason, a question for you. I see the logic in Alabama. I'm looking to fade Michigan out of that region. The only other team I'm considering is Texas right there, because we just said we don't like Florida State. I'm betting against Colorado. That leaves the six seed BYU as my next option. So really I'm between Texas and Alabama as the team I'm going to have advancing out of that bracket.
Yeah, and then that BYU team is kind of in the same vein as Gonzaga. I mean, you saw them play the Zags really tough, but, you know, who else did they play throughout the year? But they are a bigger team. They can also shoot the ball really well, too. So I think that they can kind of make some waves. They got to obviously escape whoever comes out of that Michigan State UCLA thing. I have BYU beating Texas in that round of 32 and then falling to Alabama. So Texas, that Abilene Christian game is going to be tough for Texas. That is going to be a grinder of a game.
All right, bringing in Rohit here. Rohit, give us your Final Four and some thoughts on your mindset and strategy around this.
Well, I think the big thing for me is just it's hard kind of going into it because it's been such a strange year and the tournaments were so weird with, you know, teams having to drop out, you know, Virginia dropping out, Kansas dropping out, that sort of thing. I am very confident in Gonzaga making it out of the West region. I think it's weird for a number one seed that is unbeaten to be a bit underrated. But I think if you're listening to all the chatter around there, there's a lot of people who think they aren't for real, that they walk through an easy schedule. And the thing is, though, if you look back at before their conference schedule began, they played a pretty tough lineup of teams from outside their conference. And who do they beat? They beat Kansas. They beat Iowa. They beat Virginia, and they beat West Virginia, and they beat them pretty much all in a row. They beat them all convincingly. And it turns out that three of those four teams just happen to be the three other top seeds in their region, which is kind of a crazy coincidence, but it shows that they have a path to victory against those teams, and they've done it before. And so I think that they do kind of make their way through. Let's keep in mind too, that at this point, they might as well be a Power Six conference team, because they are consistently near the top of the country. They advance every March Madness. And I think this team is better than the team that made it to the championship in 2017. I think this team is the one to beat. Looking over at some of the other regions, I think I do like Alabama, as Jason already pointed out, coming out from the South. I think they've just got a lot of weapons. They run at a fast pace, but they play really tough defense. And I think a lot of teams just can't keep up with that. They've got that length. They've got that athleticism, play very good team ball. Love Illinois. I think Illinois and Gonzaga are kind of the two teams to beat. Illinois is just red hot right now, super efficient on both ends of the floor, and they have two of the best players in the country. So I think that also makes them really tough. Baylor's a tricky one. It's funny. I mean, just a month ago, I would have probably said that Baylor was my front runner to win the national championship, but they've looked pretty shaky ever since coming back from that COVID-enforced shutdown. You look over at them and yeah, I mean, they had that tough loss to Oklahoma State. Had a big loss to Kansas, but then they also had some tough games against Iowa State, Kansas State. Like they're just not quite looking like they were before. And I have a hard time trusting to get out of what I think would be a really tough bracket over there. So I'm trying to kind of figure that one out right now. I think there are a lot of teams that could kind of sneak through. One team that I just previously mentioned, but I think could end up making the Final Four, is Oklahoma State. Love how well they've been playing lately, beating Virginia twice, West Virginia twice, and beating them once without Cade Cunningham was especially impressive. And then you look at the fact that Cunningham might be the best player in the country right now, and how well they're playing as a team and how they're gelling as a unit. They lost to Texas, but I mean, Texas had the day off before because Texas didn't end up having to play in the semifinals. So they kind of had an easy path to face Oklahoma State in that Big 12 championship game. And, you know, all things equal, if they come in with the same amount of rest, play each other again, I'm not sure you get the same result. So I think you could see Oklahoma State make a case and make its way into the Final Four.
So that would be super interesting, because if Oklahoma State were to do that, I think Illinois to the Final Four or final game is going to be one of the biggest picks that we see. The tough thing about that is if you choose Oklahoma State, then that means you're putting an element of support in the South saying, are you taking Baylor? And if you're not taking Baylor, are you taking Ohio State or Arkansas or Purdue? And I'm not sure how good I feel about having someone out of that region go to the championship game, or you have to say, I'm all in on this Oklahoma State team. If they beat Illinois, then they're going to the final game.
Yeah. And I think that's the case. Like I still think Illinois is better than Oklahoma State, but I think if they manage to make their way through and beat Illinois, then yeah, I think they go to the finals. I don't see anyone kind of coming out of the other way unless it's Baylor, but Baylor needs to get back on track. I think at this point, I don't trust Baylor 100% to make its way to the championship game. If they prove it over the next couple of weeks, then I think you could see Baylor emerge once again as a championship favorite. But right now, yeah, I think if Oklahoma State makes its way through, beats Illinois, they might become the team to beat.
All right, Jared, going to be bringing you in now. Give us your thoughts on your Final Four and mindset around all this.
Yeah, so as Jason Rowe had already said, I mean, Baylor in the South, that's a really tough bracket because you've got Ohio State and Purdue and Arkansas that are all easily capable of making the run out of that region. And Baylor has to deal with Wisconsin or UNC in the second round, which is, again, those are two big name programs that won't be easy times. That said, I tend to lean with experience a lot of times. And in that region, you know, Baylor, you've got the juniors in Butler and Mitchell and the senior in Teague. And I think when you get to those later rounds and, you know, they're going against a young Purdue team, going against an Arkansas team that's led by a freshman. And I think they're a little bit better than Ohio State. Like I still see Baylor coming out of that bracket. I think, you know, as Rohit alluded to, they will kind of figure it out and get back now that they're in a chance to have more practice and a chance to not playing this wonky schedule back and forth. The seniors and the leadership will take over And I do see them getting to the Final Four. Now, who they'll play in the Final Four, I think it's Illinois as well. You know, that inside-out combination of Coburn and Dodsunmu is absolutely lethal. And they're, you know, they're doing it on both ends of the floor, and they're hot right now. Taco, you said they're the best team in the best conference. So that really stands for something. Going on the other half, I also think Gonzaga has a great path there. You said, you know, their toughest opponents are teams they've already beaten. And there seems a lot of question marks. So I think Gonzaga, as long as the weight and the pressure of running undefeated doesn't wear down on them, they should be fine. But again, this is also a veteran team. They've been together for a while. So I think they can come through and make that run. And then as much as I love Alabama and I also want to fade Michigan with Liberts out, I'm actually going to go with Texas to win that bracket. You know, they came out of the Big 12. They're playing well. And they've got talent. They've got some dudes over there. You know, a lot of, I think the majority of their rotation was like former 4- and 5-star recruits. So a lot of potential in senior year. And it's Shaka Smart. I know he hasn't had a great tenure with the Longhorns so far. And this was kind of almost felt like a year that he had to prove it, and he's really coming through. And I think just some of the magic there with a bracket and a region that's really up for the taking. I could see the Longhorns kind of surprising people making the run.
All right, Andrew, bringing you in finally to give your thoughts on your Final Four.
I wish I could be more argumentative, but I'm going with Illinois out of my region. Everybody's broken it down to this point. They're one of the best teams in the country, with arguably two of the best players in the country. The path outside of this very, very sexy Sweet 16 matchup against Oklahoma State, if they get through Oklahoma State, they have a very, very clear path to the Final Four. And I have them marked in already as my national champion. So you guys can come at with me, come at me with that in a moment if you want. But I also agree with Gonzaga. Gonzaga got a nice draw as well. I see them getting back to the national championship as well. In the South, I really like Arkansas coming out of there. I like Moses Moody a lot. I think he's one of those guys we could be just writing about in that Kemba Walker sense by the time this tournament's said and done. And I think the winner of, I believe both Arkansas and Ohio State will meet in the Elite Eight, I believe. And I believe the winner of that game is going to be the one who will be in the Final Four. And I'm agreeing with Jason with Alabama. Alabama does a lot of things really well. And I think with Michigan's, if Livers is out, this is Alabama's to lose. Once again, Alabama has to get through UConn. I think UConn's a really scrappy team. James Bouknight is a problem for everyone. If he's healthy, they're a completely different team. Some people were having the Huskies rated much higher. And if they just consider the games he played, their numbers are much better. So that'll be a challenge for Alabama, but I see them coming out of that region.
All right. And as we wrap this up, the way that I'm seeing things is I love to root for things that I want to happen. Living in Chicago, both my parents and my family, they went to Illinois. I'm all on board for Illinois. On the Gonzaga side of things, they are clearly the best team in the nation. They're undefeated. I kind of like being a better who's going to potentially be on that, because you'll remember that run forever. Guess what? That's a super chalky thing. But this is the beauty of March Madness, is that's why we place jelly beans on all the other games, that these bracket challenges, that's just one of the ways that we can get action. Yeah, that's chalky. Yeah, that's the what thing that most people are going to have. If you want to be contrarian, you say pick a non-Gonzaga Illinois to win it all.
Hold up.
The bracket is set, so make Covers your source for all March Madness betting info, including latest odds, analysis, educational guides, props, and free contests, including their awesome forum contest where you get to make tournament picks for your chance to win some sweet Covers gear and credits. And the best part, it's 100% free to play. Visit the Covers College Basketball Forum today to start playing and to earn your bragging rights in the Covers community. Woo! All right, so what we're going to do now is we are going to bring everyone in and we're going to do sort of a round robin. We're going to give thoughts on the matchups, everyone's takes with the Final Four. Jason, I will allow you to go first and then everyone can jump in accordingly.
Yeah, so I'm going with Alabama. It sounded like there wasn't much pushback in terms of Alabama. And from the way things are trickling down, for at least what I see coming out, looks like they're going to run into Gonzaga. And I think they are a team that can give Gonzaga issues. I think Alabama has everything to win the national title right now. I mean, you want to lean on those KenPom metrics and that, you know, advanced defensive efficiency. That's the big one. They're second in that overall in college basketball. There's a, you know, they can get up and down the floor. They can torment teams. They can force turnovers. And they can score those three balls too. They'll bury you. So I think Alabama is definitely the team to beat here. Coming out of the
they can go cold at times, though. They take a lot of shots and they miss a lot of shots at times, so that makes me a little wary with them.
They are susceptible when the three-point shot, if that's not falling, but this is a team that isn't, like, they're just not an offensive power.
Yeah,
they can score easy buckets off of turnovers and create those turnovers and those opportunities. And also too, I mean, I running into a team like Gonzaga, they're a big athletic team that can give Gonzaga some fits. They can protect that hoop and force them to outside. And like I said, force them to kind of play that half court set, which is something that, that Gonzaga does not like to do.
Yeah. So Alabama is like
going to work against them, because I think Alabama has a tendency to play very fast and they love like running up and down. I think that kind of plays right into Gonzaga's hands, where if you play that fast, you give them those extra possessions, they're going to take advantage of them. And I think we saw that the very start of the year with Kansas, when Kansas kind of went outside of their comfort zone and tried to go shot for shot with Gonzaga, and Gonzaga put up over 100 on them. And
this ain't Pepperdine we're talking about. Pepperdine or one of these WCC
Kansas teams. I'm talking about Kansas.
No, I'm talking about any matchup that Gonzaga has. I mean, that is the biggest argument against Gonzaga, is that, yeah, they went in and played some teams early in the season, but like level of competition coming into that tournament, I mean, Jesus, they almost didn't win their tournament. BYU had them on the ropes, which was like the live bet game of the year, but they showed just, you know, how they can get thrown out of it. Of course, they were going to come back. Everyone expected them to come back, but they were ice cold in that first game, in that last game against BYU, and struggled against BYU in their meeting before that too.
Everyone needs to get tested.
Alabama's like the living embodiment of a 3-and-D team. Like, they are actually like pure three. Like, you know, they shoot a lot of threes and they play great defense. But getting back to Rose's point, I mean, yeah, Gonzaga hasn't played a ton of people, but they did hang like 100 points on Virginia and Kansas. It wasn't West Virginia as well. Like, they played three,
yeah,
like
they put 90
three, like, and they lit all three of them up. Like, they can score against anyone at any time. And yeah, I think if you want to go into a track meet with Gonzaga, they're going to be more than happy to applaud you and go with you there.
And I think Alabama's going to do that. That's one thing. BYU doesn't play that style. BYU slowed the game down. I don't think Alabama's going to try to even slow the game down, because that's not their style of
play.
All right. So is anybody taking Gonzaga to not make the final game?
She said she'll never want to.
Looks like you've got crickets.
I have them in the final.
It's a cakewalk of a bracket. And then you could have you know,
it is
the way that it is compared to that South region. Jesus. I mean, they definitely earned that number one overall seed. But, and then, like I said, too, like, depending on how things trickle out with UVA and Kansas by the end of day today, which is Tuesday, I mean, if they have positive tests, you've got a replacement team. You've got a last four team getting slid in there for two higher seeds.
All right. So here's the next question then. So is anybody not taking Gonzaga to win it all?
I have not completely filled my bracket, but I will die on my sword with Alabama. As an LSU fan, I'll die on
Alabama. I'm going with Illinois. I think Illinois gets it done. They're just, the inside out game is too good. And it's not just them. They just play so well as a unit. And plus their uniforms are awesome. So
The one question I have about Illinois, and they've been much better about it lately, but foul trouble. And that's something that hurt them at the beginning of the year. And especially Coburn, when Coburn gets into foul trouble, old Cockburn gets into foul trouble, things don't go well for them. And I think they're going to be tested when, you know, when Gonzaga is going up against them. offensively, and if they get into foul trouble, that could be problems, you know.
That is, I am admittedly a little nervous. They aren't a great free throw shooting team either, as a whole, so that I am a little nervous about that.
Yeah, my initial thought was to go Illinois over Gonzaga, but the more I think about it, Illinois is two of the best players in the country on the court. Gonzaga actually have three of the best players in the country on the court, you know, with Kisper, Tibby, and Suggs. So
Suggs.
I know you people want to talk about destiny and all those things, but like, this is just a really good Gonzaga team. They score, they do it all. And, you know, they also have that leadership and they've been there. They're not just a bunch of, you know, Kentucky style freshmen and one and done. Like, these are guys that have been there for a while. Like, I think that leadership will also help them as they get later into the tournament.
All right. So we talked about Alabama a ton. If you're going to give a non Gonzaga or Illinois team, you're going to be contrarian to try and win your bracket, because if you pick the non team that wins it all, a la when Virginia won, everybody else was on the other side, who would be the one team you would choose? It sounded like, Rohit, you had some love for Oklahoma State, but if there was a non Gonzaga Illinois team, who would you choose?
I think Oklahoma State is one that I mentioned, but Baylor's the other one. I mean, like I said, I have some questions about them because of how they closed their season. But if they show that they can, you know, that they're back to the way they were, you know, a month and a half ago, they are scary on both ends of the floor. And, you know, they've got tons of veteran leadership, take care of the ball. They can score, they can defend, they can do it all. So, you know, if I had to take someone outside of those two, I think Baylor could not just win the championship. I could see Baylor going on a run and just stomping everyone.
Yeah, I mean, basketball also, like modern basketball tends to be led by guard play, and Baylor's got three of the best guards that there is. Like you said, they got to get through this gauntlet of potentially facing either UNC or Wisconsin, then probably facing Purdue, and then facing probably Ohio State or Arkansas. Like, those are really, really difficult matchups. And if they come through on that, they're going to be ready. They're going to be tested. I mean, you can make an argument that because of Gonzaga's cakewalk, they might not have to like really ramp it up until, you know, this Elite Eight or that. And sometimes, you know, that can work against you as opposed to a team just heading from the go and being full bore right away. I agree. I think Baylor is like, they were number two and number one in the country for so long for a reason. And then they got thrown off because of the schedule thing. If they can get back on track, I think they really, and I think they're going to be a good value because everyone seems to be kind of sleeping on them a little bit.
Science and stats says no. Baylor. So of course, the all-encompassing adjusted defensive efficiency, the holy grail of college basketball metrics, something you can find on our site. So since 2012, only one Final Four team has ranked outside of the top 40 in adjusted defensive efficiency. That was Kansas, which was 47th in 2018. Baylor right now, I believe, is like 44th outside of the top 40. So obviously science says they can't. Look at like 32 national semifinal teams. They ranked top 10 in that metric. 9 were within the top 3. Sorry, Baylor. You're not cutting it. KenPom says no.
Sign me up for James Bouknight doing his best Kemba Walker impression. There we go.
Who's the number one team in that efficiency? Is it Loyola Chicago right now?
Yeah.
I think it might be. Huh? There we go. If you want a local team to cheer on, Rob, there'd be a fun one.
Well, most certainly so. Was there any other questions or thoughts that you guys wanted to pose based on what you're seeing in the bracket right now?
I think also, it was interesting, we were actually talking about this before, is that a lot of these underdogs are not big dogs anymore. like, you know, compared to previous seasons, at least looking in the South region, I mean, Colgate's a 14 seed and they opened at plus 10. I think it's like 8.5 now. Mm-hmm. North Texas is the 13 and they're only 7.5 against the Purdue team that was one of the better teams of the Big Ten. And they look front run. You know, so like just looking at something like that, it seems like the books really are playing this close to the vest and expecting a lot of tight games, even with, you know, these power conference teams against, you know, mid-majors where, you know, traditionally you'd think, oh, this is going to be a shoe-in win. They're really expecting some tight games.
So, Jared, I want to talk about to yes and that the live betting strategy that we talked about with seeing a short dog. And we were talking about that Purdue game where there could be an opportunity to potentially get Purdue in plus money if they get down early, and just sort of how if you missed out on the initial opening line. So let's say, for example, Ohio goes from 10.5 to 7. You see that 3.5 points go away. It doesn't mean that you're done betting on that game. Talk to us about, or let's have an open discussion around the live betting strategy side of things, because Jason, you mentioned the live betting game of the year when Gonzaga was down to BYU and the opportunity. And that's the beauty of March Madness. These opportunities are going to present itself because some of these dogs will get up to where all of a sudden the favorite's now getting points.
Yeah, I mean, you're always going to see those from time to time. Every year there is that one favorite that comes out, falls behind 15 within the first 10 minutes of the game. And you know that they're going to come back. However, I will hearken to the Virginia loss as a number one seed and how much money I blew betting Virginia over and over and over and over. God, until there was like 5 minutes left in the game where they were down, what, like 25 or something. Oh, they're going to come back. They're going to come back. But I mean, that was a situation where Virginia just didn't have the horses to come back. Unless you had defensive stops, they weren't an offense that was going to score a ton. But those situations arise and you got to kind of jump on them quickly. You know, when you see those like 14 seeds go up by 15 early on, you know, usually the universe does balance itself out. And I do have the Infinity Gauntlet, which is all of the balance as well, too.
I was wondering if you could turn that on.
Yes, of course I got to turn it on. The universe does tend to balance itself out. So those opportunities are there too. Same thing with over-under totals too. If you have a team that is normally, a kick-ass offensive team and they come out ice cold from the start, sometimes it's big game nerves and those things will kind of settle down as the guys start to kind of bang bodies and get into the flow of the game. But it's out there. March Madness is fantastic for it.
Absolutely. Especially, you know, when you look at when you have these higher seeds that are very young teams, you know, and like we said, we call it the North Texas versus Purdue. North Texas is a very senior squad. Mm-hmm. So it wouldn't be crazy to see, you know, Purdue maybe have a little bit of nerves and jitters early on and North Texas jump out to an early lead, you know, get on them defensively, just, you know, a little bit more comfortable with the big stage and that. Obviously, Purdue is the more talented team. So, yeah, you might get a chance to grab Purdue at, you know, maybe -1, -2, maybe even or plus money if it jumped to that. And those are the kind of things I'd be looking for, especially as when you got those like really senior teams against maybe some younger teams that might be slow to start.
I find myself getting picky and I won't bet the favorite until they hit money on the money line. That's it. It's like they could be sitting at like -105 and I'll get greedy and be like, no. And then they'll go on like a 20-3 run and then your ship is
gone. I think the greatest thing too about any time you're live betting is when you're actually watching the game live, you can get behind the numbers, right? You know, if a team scores only like 20 points in the first half, you can be like, oh, the other team's playing great defense. Or you can be like, nah, they've just been missing open shots that first half. Those are going to drop.
Exactly.
And then you can, you know, you hit the over or, you know, back that team that's down at halftime. And I think that gives a lot of opportunity. We've seen that just in the, you know, conference tournament week, which is such a just a little teaser of what's to come. But conference tournament week, we had so many big second half turnarounds and, you know, see leads evaporate like that in the last minutes of the game. So,
yeah, Pac-12 tournament was just rich with them. Every time anyone had a 15-point lead, nothing was safe.
Yeah, and I think there's just so much value in being able to jump on those teams when you see momentum start to swing.
So can you guys talk about your first half betting mindset? Because I think for a lot of these favorites or games that might have double digit spreads, one of the things that can be tough is when all of a sudden a team goes up by 30 and then empties the bench with 10, 5, 3 minutes to go. And now all of a sudden the integrity of your bet isn't what you thought it was, which is essentially the mindset for first half betting because you're getting that team. And I hear you guys talking about it when you guys each come on my show so often, you talk about first half betting. And I think the casual fan isn't used to betting it. So they can't comprehend why you would be taking it like you normally would a full game.
Sure. I mean, I kind of mentioned that with the Alabama and Iona game. You know, you've got these big spreads out there, plenty of room open for the back door to bust open and one of those teams to slide in. And you see it with, you know, a few careless threes or guys just kind of walking on defense. If it's a bit of a blowout, like you said, they start resting starters. It's a tournament format. it's a, you know, survive in advance. So guys have to be conscious of how much energy guys are playing, especially in the opening rounds. And those things are there. So, I mean, if you do feel a little hesitant, maybe take a look at how teams have performed, go to those play-by-play stats, look at Alabama and see what they did in the final 5 minutes of a second half when they were putting the boots to a team. And, you know, did Coach Oates start rolling in the bench? Did they start relaxing on defense? What happened? So those tendencies are there. And yeah, it, it can be painful. I mean, I don't know how many under bets I watched evaporate during the conference tournament. Just because the barf came out because just, you know, fouls at the end of games or, you know, with 3 minutes left, you're clear with a minute 30, you're clear. And then all of a sudden they hit, you know, some team comes down and hits three threes in a row and boom, there's your over under gone. But I mean, that's all part of sports betting. It's nothing new.
Yeah. I find that to be the case in college basketball. These kids get cold, much colder than professionals do, but then before you know it, like you said, someone will walk down the floor and hit three straight threes. So, and these tendencies you spoke of, they change from team to team quite often. So just do your homework, find out which teams are, like maybe Jared said, like which, what are the young teams? What are the old teams? Who's going to be a little intimidated by the bright lights of this tournament and who's not, who's just there for fun, who's just there happy to be there, and who's there with business. Like Houston, mm-hmm. team I talked about a lot, like they're going to be overlooked a lot, and they just give her for the whole 40 minutes. They don't care. They'll put if they're up 20, they don't care. They'll try to go up 40. So it definitely changes team to team. So just do your homework.
Yeah,
and I think the other thing to keep in mind too is just how many of these college teams don't play that well away from home. So playing in neutral ground can hurt, and it can really, you know, bring some of the worst out in some of their shooters. And then there's other programs, especially the bigger programs, that are used to that travel scheduling. They're used to playing in different arenas, and they have their shots, and from the beginning of the game till the end, they'll be on. But for a lot of teams, it takes a while to adjust to that. And kind of having a good feel for that is a great way to kind of bet those lines. As far as first half betting goes, you know, Gonzaga's been someone I've been on for a while on that because they're getting massive lines right now. I can't imagine what their line is going to be for that first game against whoever they end up playing. But at least taking them in the first half because they come out to fast starts, they shoot the ball right away well. And then, you know, things can sort of cool down later, or, you know, teams can catch up later. But I really like them on those first half bets.
Yeah. And also, you know, let's look at, like Taco said, look at motivation. So, you know, you get that Houston team that's been getting a little bit of disrespect, and like, oh, are they a week two seed? Or, you know, look at a Baylor that's, you know, people are like, oh, they're kind of struggling. Like, I think really these teams that want to come out and make a statement, especially in this first round, they want to say, you're sleeping on us. No, we are for real. Those are the teams I want to look, especially in these first half spreads, to really come out and just stomp their opponents and leave no doubt and be like, you know, announce that they're here and they're ready to make a run.
Yeah, you got to be careful of those fat and happy teams too. Teams like Georgetown, teams like Oregon State that won their conference tournament and punched a ticket when they didn't think they were going to. Those ones too, you always kind of have to take the results with a little bit of salt. Maybe they're happy to be there, or maybe it is momentum they can build it. And Ro, you were talking about playing in neutral courts too. Something that we look at, especially when you get to the Final Four and you start playing these games in big stadiums and these football stadiums, is the shooting and the depth perception inside
and the sight lines.
Yeah, if you get some of these small conference teams that advance and they play in these little cozy gyms, which are great for shooting. I played ball in a nice cozy gym and it was awesome. I was a great shooter. And then I go, couldn't throw a grape in the ocean. So, you know, it's that thing, those little, you know, changes in venue definitely can impact the team, especially when it comes to shooting and depth and field of depth when you're playing in those cavernous stadiums.
So I feel like we've identified two teams that could potentially be, how did we not see this before we filled out our brackets? Baylor being one of them. Jason, your stats were phenomenal, but I do remember, Rohit, when I had you on the podcast previously, we talked about Gonzaga plus Baylor versus the field. So now that's changed a little bit to being Gonzaga in Illinois, but Baylor seems like a team where if all of a sudden they got rolling, everyone would be like, well, how did we not see that coming? And Oklahoma State on the run right now. Is there any other teams out there that we didn't talk talk about that could potentially be if they won their first round matchup and or got a second round, you're like, well, wait a second. There's a team that could be rolling that we just didn't identify, but it may be right in front of us.
I think the one Taco kind of touched on a bit, Houston. Houston is a good team. And I also like their conference isn't that bad. I mean,
no.
A couple of years ago, you know, when Penny Hardaway showed up to Memphis, everyone was saying like Memphis was going to be the next powerhouse, right? No one was saying that, oh, Memphis is in a terrible conference, but Houston's not getting much respect. And they're very talented. Grimes is a great player. I mean, he was starting on Kansas. And I mean, they're such a good team. They're having good players transfer away. So they are so talented. I think they definitely deserve their seed. And I think if you see a couple big performances at the start of the tournament, you'll see people actually sit up and take notice and say, all right, these guys are for real.
Yeah.
I think that I see them playing San Diego State in the Elite Eight, and that could be a really interesting matchup of two teams that are both overlooked in that sense. And the winner of that game could give Illinois a run.
I like what you said too, Rhode, about Oregon. They were a team that was kind of undervalued all year. Like they were the number one seed in that Pac-12 tournament, and they just kind of ran into a rivalry game in Oregon State, and Oregon State always plays them tough. And now they come in here as a number seven seed, and they are like super efficient on offense. They spread it around. They can score in different ways. I mean, they just had a bad game against Oregon State. They couldn't hit threes, but they were playing very, very well before that. And I think it is going to sound funny to say, but I think number one Michigan might be a team that everyone is kind of poo-pooing right now because of the Livers injury. I don't know if anyone's really advancing them that far, you know, especially with teams like Alabama and LSU and even Colorado on that side of the bracket. And it's, you know, Michigan still has plenty of talent. It's got to figure out how to win without that guy being so impactful both sides of the floor. But I don't know if we're seeing many number one seeds coming out of the East right now.
Yeah, and I'm just picturing the storylines as we head to, you know, Elite Eight Final Four weekend. Everyone's like Shaka Smart back, harking to his VCU days at Texas. And, you know, because everyone bailed on Michigan, everyone jumped on Alabama, and, you know, Shaka Smart finally paid off and got through at Texas like he was supposed to many years ago. And I feel like, I mean, I know they're a three seed, but they don't seem to be getting a whole lot of chat. Even though they just had a good run in the Big 12 tournament, I think they could go deep. People like, oh yeah, like why did we ever doubt Shaka? Is the question.
Yeah,
the hair.
This is probably the biggest weakness for the Longhorns is just ball control and not getting burned by those mistakes. And like I said, Abilene Christian, they force teams to make mistakes. I think that's going to be a lot closer game than people expect.
How have we gone all this far and not talked about Luka Garza in Iowa? Because if we're going to say who is the team who could potentially dethrone Gonzaga, well, they're the one who's the two seed sitting there in that region with someone who is one of, if not the best players in all of college basketball.
Honestly, I'm not sold in Iowa, and I'm typically year in, year out. I like rooting for Iowa. I watch their games. I loved them last year. They're very, like, they've got tons of veteran leadership. Almost everyone's an upperclassman on that starting five. Garza's great, but they've got a lot of good players around them. But I just see them play down to talent a lot, which is not good when you want to walk into the NCAA tournament. I don't think you're going to have an easy time in that first round. I think they're going to struggle down the stretch. And even Garza, like, I think I like Garza a lot. I'm probably even higher on him as an NBA prospect than a lot of people are, but I actually don't think he's much better than last year. I think Garza last year was pretty much the exact same player he is this year. People just didn't talk about him as much. I don't really think this Iowa team is much better this year than last year. And I don't see them beating a team like Gonzaga. You saw that earlier in the year, they played Gonzaga at the big start of the year and they just got annihilated. And I think they still have, they still have that tendency to play down to their opponents, and that will come back to haunt them.
All right. Yeah, go ahead, Jared.
As I say, no, I you know, everyone talked about Houston being the weakest two seed. I might think Iowa might actually be the weakest two seed of them all. I mean, I would have personally liked to see maybe Arkansas be in that spot. I think as a three seed, they could have jumped up, or even Oklahoma State, who got, you know, super disrespected by dropping all the way down to a four, could have potentially been up there, but.
All right, so it looks like we have covered virtually everything that you can think of. Congratulations to everyone, because we are here. March Madness has arrived. We have nothing but betting on college basketball for the next month. It is going to be absolutely fantastic. So I'm going to run through each of you guys. Where can everybody connect with you, starting with Jason Logan?
Sure. You can follow me on Twitter at CoversJLo and come to the site and read all kinds of good stuff that I'm writing.
And Jason, there's going to be a lot of good stuff on covers.com to help everyone prepare both for the opening weekend as well as the entire tournament. Is there anything in specific you want to point us to?
Get your first 15 bets in. Those are a blast. Whether you win or lose, they're just fun. It's like the basketball version of horse racing. It's pretty quick and dirty. You can get, if you get a team that shoots well from 3-point range, you get some good value with underdogs. Go bet the first 15. Those are great.
All right, Rohit, moving over to you. Where can everybody connect with you?
Best ways on Twitter, covers_row. That's covers_RO. And yeah, just stay tuned in covers.com, where you have pretty much, we're going to have every game covered, lots of in-depth previews. So just check us out for all your needs.
Jared, moving this over to you. Where can everybody connect?
Surprise, I'm also on Twitter at JLHawk, H-O-C-H. So just call me at JLHawk. And yeah, we're getting ready for this. Yeah, it covers, we're going to have all your previews, lots of other betting assistance and betting guides too, to cover, the big dance from every angle. So
not going to give you your MySpace page?
I can go to Instagram if you want.
There you go.
And Andrew, I am already looking forward to living and dying with your bets and the bad beats and everything in between, which I can oh so feel through your tweets. Where can everybody connect with you?
You're correct. I will be crying out loud through Twitter, and you can find me there at covers_Kaylee. And for all your KBO needs, come. We will get there eventually, maybe, but no, all your Midwest region betting needs, I'll be on there tweeting loudly, and you guys can all laugh at me.
Andrew, it's funny that we laugh about KBO, but this time last year, instead of doing this podcast, you and I did a KBO podcast to help keep our betting juices flowing. So that's why we are so thankful for this moment. On my end, you can hit me up on Twitter at Rob Cressy, and we would love to hear from you. Hit all of us up, hit up covers, because we get down like you get down. It's going to be 4 days straight of nonstop betting, live betting, certainly on my end. And I'm going to be very active in the live betting market. I'm still going to be betting on NBA, all college basketball. We would love to hear from you. We would love to see your cards. We would love to live and die on these games with you. So definitely make sure to hit us up. And remember, you want to be a sharp, don't be a square with your bankroll. Be disciplined with your money management. The book of the devil hit you with the rap level attempt. The 1, 2, 3, your pen. I get action. So everybody jump with your rump. If you like the way the sound pump, pump it in your back trunk. And let loose with the juice when I do rock. I'm too hot. Some say I got more juice than Tupac.